Well, look, nobody likes a know-it-all, do they? You know, someone who, when it all goes wrong, they just sort of pipe up with that, "No, I told you so," you know? I mean, we've all sort of wanted to say that, haven't we, at times? You know, we've all wanted to sort of maybe have a T-shirt that you can just kind of go, "I told you so," you know, written on. But, you know, while they're terribly smug, while everyone's running around trying to pick up the pieces, but we know that nobody likes that sort of person, so we restrain ourselves, don't we? It's not what people want to hear when everything's a bit of a mess. So is that Paul's style? You know, I mean, is he just a bit of a poor loser? Is he the sort of person that would just pipe up with a, "Well, I told you so"? Well, let's find out as we pick up Acts 27 again today, as we come to the end of our series on Acts, almost next week, no, a couple of weeks time. Well, if you remember, last week we left Paul and Luke and Aristarchus and Julius the Roman centurion and the rest of the crew and the soldiers and the prisoners relieved to finally make it to the port of Fair Havens. However, although Paul had warned them against it, the pilot of the ship and the owner, they persuade Julius that it's too dangerous for the boat to winter at Fair Havens. So they decide to sail along the coast to the port of Phoenix, which admittedly was a more suitable port for them to winter in. And things seem to start off well, don't they, as we pick up at verse 13. "When the contrary winds die down and a gentle south wind begins to blow, the crew see their opportunity and they set sail. Once more, hugging the coast of Crete, they're hoping to make good time. They've got a mere 40 miles to sail westwards to Phoenix and to safety. But trouble isn't long coming. It may not have brought all the snow that we had earlier on this year, but the ship is hit by its very own beast from the east. The northeaster," writes Luke. "And it's a violent wind. It's recorded by other ancient writers. And Luke describes it as being of hurricane force." I had to go and visit my mum and pick Charlotte up this week. And, you know, there was a Storm Hector. And, you know, you just try and avoid those winds, don't you? So Storm Hector was going across the north of the country. I was going south. I was going sort of across and then I was going up like that. And it worked. And I avoided all those hurricane force. Well, I don't think it was quite hurricane force, but, you know, all those strong winds that could have blown trees down and things. "But this is a storm force 12 wind," says Luke. And it must have been terrifying for everyone on the vessel. Ancient ships weren't able to tack into the wind. Mike's not here today, so he's not able to contradict me and tell me that my knowledge of ancient ships isn't correct, but there you go. But as far as my research goes, ancient ships were not able to tack into the wind, so they had no other option than to be driven along by the winds wherever they took them. And the result is that the ship is blown completely off course, further and further away from not only Phoenix, but Crete itself, and in fact land altogether. Now, with winter approaching, and in the teeth of a terrible storm, Paul's ship is doing exactly what no one wanted. And you know the phrase, "all hands on deck"? Well, that's what we see now. Everyone mucking in to try and not just save the day, but save the ship, save themselves. Luke tells us that with great difficulty, they managed to pull on board and attach securely the lifeboat, which they'd obviously been towing along behind. And again, Luke's use of the word "we" means that, you know, he rolled his sleeves up too, and he was one of them pulling the boat in. They were all mucking in together. He was no mere spectator. He may not have been a skilled sailor, but when everyone was needed, Luke got stuck in. And then Luke tells us that the sailors began a task of what's called frapping the ship. It's basically lashing the ship together, you know, underneath, with that bit of the hull of the ship, to stop it from splitting apart, or actually even sort of end to end to stop the back of the boat from breaking in a storm, as it's being hit by these towering waves. And in a desperate bid to avoid running aground on the sandbars of Syrtis, which stretch out from the North African coast, the crew then lower the sea anchor to drag along the seabed to try and slow them down. Well, it works in the sense that they seem to avoid these sandbars, but the wind and the waves keep coming, and the ship is dragged further and further out to sea. And the next day, things are no better The ship and all its passengers were told have taken such a violent battering that they decide to lighten the ship, which probably means that at this point the ship is taking in water as they're driven further and further out to sea. They begin to throw overboard the cargo. And presumably this continues until sort of everything is gone. You know, this is obviously, you know, you don't throw the cargo overboard lightly, do you? Because this is what's going to make you your money. You're not going to be popular if you arrive at your destination and all the cargo you've been paid to deliver is out in the middle of the sea somewhere. So this is the only choice they've got to save their lives. And this continues until it's all gone. Then on the third day, Luke documents that they then also throw overboard the ship's tackle. In other words, everything that wasn't 100% essential goes. And in desperate times, that might even include the mainsail for the ship and the main yard, which is the pole that goes across from the mast that the sail would hang on. But it's no good. So dreadful is this storm that they haven't seen the sun or the moon or the stars for days. And of course that was dreadful news, because in a time before GPS, you know, I can get my phone out now and I can see exactly where I am. I know exactly where I am, but you know, I can see that because of GPS. But there was no GPS in those days. And actually, there wasn't even a compass. Compasses hadn't even been invented. So without the sun and the moon and the stars, you had no way of knowing even where you were. They are so lost. And as the storm continued raging, writes Luke, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. And it's sometime around now that Paul appears to pop up and say, see, told you so. You should have listened to me, shouldn't you? And on the one hand, you wouldn't blame him, would you? I mean, Paul definitely wanted to get to Rome to preach the gospel. But he was a seasoned traveller. He was an experienced sailor. And he warned them against leaving fair havens. Paul's reasoning had been, look, it's better to get there a little bit late than it is to not get there at all. And in all fairness, any damage sustained by the ship in fair havens over the winter would have been trifling compared to the risk of losing the ship altogether. The apostle had been ignored, though, and overruled. But I think that Paul is not just sort of rubbing their noses in it. He's perhaps here reminding them that actually he does know what he's talking about. Remember that morale is at an all-time low. Physical and psychological strength are sapped. Those in command, those with the voices of conventional wisdom, have been able to do very little to help the situation. This is a ship where things look very bleak. Verse 21. They've gone a long time without food, because bear in mind they were only expecting a little 40-mile hop up the coast to Phoenix. And now they're out in the open sea. And verse 20, they've given up all hope of being saved. Paul, however, had been the one who'd counselled against leaving Fair Haven. So perhaps it's worth listening to him now. So what does Paul have to say? Well, there's good news and there's bad news. I can imagine in my mind's eye, I can sort of see Paul, you know, soaked to the skin, sort of hair plastered to his head, shouting above the storm, even if they were below deck as the boat pitched violently back and forth. And as he addresses the nearly 300 men gathered there, first of all, in verse 22, he encourages them to keep up their courage. You know, it'd be really easy for everyone on board at this stage to just give up hope. I mean, it's just horrible, isn't it, if you've been on a rough sea crossing. I mean, it's Father's Day today, isn't it? And I don't know if, you know, you've got Father's Day presents or you're given Father's Day presents or something. Because, you know, we dads are heroes, aren't we? I can remember a few years ago we went on holiday to France. And so we were on the ferry. And it's when we were coming back. We always have strange things when the ferries. You know, like this year, the guy behind us didn't put his handbrake on his car. That was a clever move on a moving ferry, wasn't it? Anyway, but this was another time. And we were coming back from France. And it was a little bit choppy. It was kind of like that. And I'll have to confess, I didn't feel so. But you know, you do that kind of like, well, what shall we do? You know, and, well, shall we go and have some food? I'm sort of eating, kind of thinking, I really don't want to eat this food, but I've got to pretend that everything's fine. Everything was all right. I'm not going to go into any graphic details, but you know, you really don't feel good, and you're just thinking, I just want to be kind of on land now. I just want to be stationary and flat and not going up and down, not having to think about eating gammon steak while I'm doing that, or whatever it was. Yeah? So, you know, it's easy to kind of give up hope. They've been doing this for days, and it's not just been a little sort of crossing from here to San Marlo or reverse, but actually they've just been blown out into the middle of the ocean. They don't know where they are. They're taking on water. Very easy to give up hope. You know, there's the story of the steward on the long and rough Atlantic crossing who came across a very queasy-looking passenger who's leaning over the rail of the ocean liner. Don't be discouraged, sir, he says. No one's ever died of seasickness. Well, the green around the gills passenger sort of turns round and looks at him. He says, oh, don't say that. It's only the hope of dying that's keeping me going. In some ways, it would have been easier to have given up. But Paul will have none of it. Now is the time for courage. Why? Well, Paul says in verse 22, because not one of you will be lost, but the ship will be destroyed. The good news is everyone will be alright. Everyone's going to survive. The bad news is they're going to have to go through a shipwreck first to get there. And that's going to take quite a bit of courage, isn't it? But how can Paul be so sure? Well, do you remember in verse 10, Paul's warning not to leave Fairhaven? It included the statement, men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo and to our own lives also. And I argued that I didn't think that that was because of a divine revelation. I don't think he had a message from God to not sail from there. Because although the voyage was disastrous, although the ship and the cargo were going to be lost, actually there was no loss of life. And God would have been wrong if that had been the message that he'd given to Paul at Fairhavens. And God isn't wrong. God doesn't make mistakes. But at this point, as the ship struggles through the heavy seas, Paul reveals that his words now are as a result of him being visited the night before by an angel, a messenger from God. And that messenger revealed that God is going to save all those who are sailing with Paul. So at Fairhaven, I think Paul's speaking from experience. This is a divine message from God concerning the fate of the ship and of all who sail in her. And this is why Paul is so confident about the future. He's certain of this because God has told him so. The angel is a messenger from the God to whom he, Paul, belongs and who he, Paul, serves. In the pitching and the swaying darkness of the storm-battered ship at night, God sent the angel to stand next to Paul and promised Paul that he must stand trial before Caesar. God's plans are not going to be thwarted by anything. Certainly not a storm. After all, storms, as we know, are no match for the sovereign creator of the universe. Remember in our gospel reading how the disciples, including several experienced fishermen, found themselves in trouble on the Sea of Galilee. A furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. However, Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" Does Jesus care? Of course he cares. He's there with them in the midst of the storm. He got up, he rebuked the wind, and he said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. Terrified, the disciples ask each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." Who is it? It's God. And God could start, if I could talk properly, God could calm the storm now for Paul with a word too. But remember, we're not seeing that God could smooth the way for Paul to get to Rome, but that God is emphasizing that Paul the prisoner is innocent, that Paul will survive anything that the natural world seems to throw at him. So Paul's grounds for confidence are that his trust is in God, the God to whom he belongs, the God whom he serves. If God tells him so, it will be so. Hence Paul's affirmation in verse 25, "For I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me." Now sometimes in life we don't get listened to, do we? I think that's probably true for most of us. Just like Paul wasn't listened to. And when we're proved right, like Paul was, it's tempting to say, I told you. But here Paul really is saying, take heart, because God has told me so. It isn't a sugar-coated message, is it? I mean, on the one hand, it's very bad news. The ship is going to be destroyed. Paul spells it out twice in verse 22 and 26. This is not going to be a pleasant experience for anyone. But there's good news too, that all 276 on board will be saved. God has told Paul, and Paul has faith in God. Therefore, Paul believes 100% that it will be so. And he shares that message with the rest of the crew. Now, I think that in life, we would all like to be like the disciples in the fishing boat, wouldn't we? If we've got a choice, which boat would you rather be in? Would you rather be in the disciples' fishing boat, or would you rather be in Paul's sailing ship? I think probably most hands would go up for the disciples, wouldn't we? The disciples' fishing boat. That would be the one we'd like to be in, wouldn't we? Because when the going gets tough, we just wake up sleepy Jesus, and pow, it's all still and calm again. And we might be filled with awe and praise for a moment or two, but then we can kind of get it back on with life as normal. And there are plenty of churches, and there are plenty of pastors, and there are plenty of vicars who will promise you that. But beware of the prosperity gospel. The just be a Christian, and God will make you a success in everything that you do. God will bless you with health and wealth and happiness. Message. Beware of that. Because, do you know what? God does want the best for you and for me. But that sometimes works out differently from how we imagine the best to be. What makes us think that we're any different? What makes us think that we're any better? What makes us think that we're any more privileged than, well, than say Paul, the apostle? Did God calm the storm for him? No! God said to Paul, I'm sorry, mate, you're going to be in a shipwreck soon. But he saved all their lives. When we are in the midst of the storm, because we will all face storms in our lives, when we are battered and when we are weary, when we've given up all hope, when even the grave is beckoning for us, and we can see no other future, that's when we need to send our SOS to our God. In fact, probably a good thing to do it before we get to that point. But our God is the God to whom we belong, the God whom we serve. And do you know what? What does SOS stand for? Save our souls. Oh yes, we will all have to face, at some point in our lives, a complete shipwreck. We might go through many little shipwrecks during our lives. One day we will face the ultimate shipwreck. No health and wealth and happiness gospel can protect you from that. But we will not perish, if we have faith that what God has promised will happen just as he said it would. That God has, through his sovereign Son, saved our souls forever. We will lose everything else, but we will live because he has died for us and risen again. Now, like Paul, we should recognize that that is a God who is worth belonging to and a God who is worth serving. Amen.